We'll begin today's podcast in just a moment. Made possible by KPP Financial. Select Growth and Income Program. This popular strategy utilizes KPP's unique market expertise to select top fund managers who produce quality portfolios in every market condition. Learn about our Select Growth and Income Program. Handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. And when you're ready, just go to investtalk.com to learn more about it. Click on the Investments tab. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Monday edition of Invest Talk. And we're here to try to give you an advantage in navigating the financial markets of the day. We want to try to just give you enough, all the information you need and enough ammunition to try to be better than average. You're never going to be, you're not going to be Warren Buffett. I'm not going to be Warren Buffett. It's just, we want to do better. That's all. Do better and better and better every year if we can. Learn more, understand how things work, and just get better. And that's what the show is about, trying to help you gain knowledge. Now, the Business Insider published an interesting report that focused on money management for the very wealthy. And they pointed out, as far as general investment advice is concerned, there's a perception that wealthy people must be getting much better information and advice than you and I. Now, after all, they're very rich, right? They're wealthy. Well, in this piece, they gave the highlights of a report produced by Goldman Sachs for their private wealth management clients, which means you have to have $10 million or more to get their forecasts and their advice. Okay, so what's their advice? I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to tell you what they've said in their advice. Quote, we expect continued steady economic growth, which will in turn support mid-single-digit core earnings growth. We therefore recommend our clients stay invested at their strategic allocation to U.S. equities. They expect modest single-digit returns for moderate risk, well-diversified portfolios. Modest single digit means 1, 2, and 3%. That's what modest single digit returns means. All this seems pretty boring to me. Remember, this is from Goldman Sachs, their private wealth management team, who are coming out with these recommendations and what they think is going to happen. So what about you and me and the private, regular investor, us folks? Well, is this that? You got to also remember, experts are pretty wrong pretty often. Is that outstanding news to you or surprising or in-depth? They suggest you stay invested in U.S. equities. They predict a 3% return, maybe. And U.S. growth, GDP growth, is 2 to 2.75 in 2016. 1.25 to 2% in the Eurozone, 4 to 4.5% in emerging markets. That's what they're predicting. A 15 to 20% probability of a recession, but U.S. avoids it in 2016. Is this that in-depth, smart market predictions? I don't think so. I've been talking about this kind of stuff now for weeks and months that this is what we're going to be faced with. What's so special about this? Remember, these are the really rich people. They're not getting any more advanced advice than you and I are getting. That's the kind of information they're getting. Now, where do you get your information? Obviously, those people listen to the show. Some of the information you get from this show. But where else are you getting information? And that's kind of important. You really want to know where the information's come from and how accurate they've been. I like to use, from the economic prediction point of view, I like to use Chapman University's School of Economics. They have been more consistent than other universities in their economic predictions. So that's what I use. I use as far as economic predictions for the year. And they're coming out with the same kind of information I've just read to you that Goldman Sachs is saying. I mean, there's no surprises for next year, but these are the predictions. Predictions are just that, predictions. And remember, it's for the year. What can happen inside the year could be very different. So if you want to get more information, you want to know more, learn more, go to my book, recommended book list at investtalk.com. There's lots of books there to help you learn more about economics and the market and everything else there is to know about investing. So just go to investtalk.com. Now it's time now for the conversation. We'd like to have a conversation, not just me doing a monologue. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion, so give me a call now.
Hey, this is John from Phoenix. If you could choose one sector of the market to invest in this year that you think will grow the most, starting today and then ending next year at this time, what sector of the market do you think it would be and why? Thank you, and I look forward to hearing your answer.
I have two that I think are going to do well this year. Big oil. I really do think that you were looking near the bottoms. I have some predictions from some of the fancy Goldman Sachs people and stuff of oil is going to hit $20 a barrel. And it's right near $30 a barrel now. But I think we're going to see the bottom and then a recovery this year. And remember, even though oil might hit, might go lower, oil stocks could bounce first before the actual price bounce because there's going to be people who anticipate it. Now, having said that, it's going to be not the overall market. I'm talking about big cap integrated oil companies. That's the one I think. And even though I'm not particularly fond of gold, gold has the possibility of bouncing this year. But I don't know. I think I'm going to stick with oil, big oil, not your drillers, not your speculative guys. Many of those are going to go bankrupt. But see, that's why I think big oil will take advantage of them. They'll pick up assets, pennies on the dollar. And therefore, I think big oil might be the place I might want to be. Too bad someone should keep track of this and say, and then in January 1st comes around next year, January 2nd, let's see how big oil did. I also think, you know, your biotech might bounce too, but we'll see. I also think we're going to have a pretty decent correction in the market for the first time in a number of years this year. Kind of counterintuitive, huh? Counter kind of slaps at the face of what I think sector is going to work. If I think the market's going to, you know, have a big correction, well, I also think it might recover this year by the end of the year too. So some investors fear an increase in interest rates, which means dividend investing might be over. Dividend investing can still work. That's going to be our main talking point today. I like dividend investing. I have a whole program based on that. So I really do like dividend investing. So we'll talk about it. Now, I might have a bias on that. So just be aware of it. China's economy is not really the problem for U.S. markets. So what is the problem? And this is kind of an in-depth article that I need to go over a little bit and take a little bit more time by Forbes magazine. And I think you'll find that interesting. 33% of all oil companies are in danger of bankruptcy. Do you know how many filed bankruptcy so far and how much debt they had? And China says the yuan falling 10% this year is ridiculous because there's people predicting it's going to fall 10% this year. China says that's ridiculous. And we're talking about a senior Chinese economic official saying that. He says they're going to defend it. We need to talk about that. Do you remember Japan defending the Japanese yen? They did it for years, and successfully for years. Is that what we're seeing from China? They're going to successfully try to defend their currency? We'll see. We want to talk about those. Those are the things we're going to discuss. So what's on your mind?
Time now for this market update for Monday, February 1st. Another steep fall for oil prices, but the market resisted any big reaction. Monday brought about a 6% drop in prices of crude oil and natural gas. The Dow Jones Industrial Average edged down 17 points, or about 0.1%, to 16,449. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index lost less than a point to 1,939, and the NASDAQ Composite edged up 6 points, or about 0.1%. Bond prices fell. The yield for a 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.96%. This market update brought to you by KPP Financial. And when Steve meets with our listeners, he covers a lot of ground. One of the most important considerations is allocation. People are concerned about risk, and allocation connects directly with risk. If you're concerned about shielding your retirement funds from too much risk, but maximizing growth, think about investing an hour with Steve in one of our California satellite offices or by Skype or telephone. To start the process, go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. The next date's coming up, Dana Point in Southern Orange County, February 10th. Skype call set for February 17th. And Steve will be in our San Jose satellite office on February 24th. Now we continue with this Invest Talk replay. You can always get your question to Steve and Justin, 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next Invest Talk.
Suraj Fremont, how you doing, Suraj?
Yeah, I'm fine. Steve, thank you. I have a question on the mutual fund.
Sure.
I want to know what the redemption fees are, because I see there's no load mutual funds and there's a redemption fees, and it's say 2%. And what that means, they charge you 2% when you sell the mutual fund, or they don't charge if you sell after like certain months, 3 months, 6 months?
What that means, you pretty much you kind of know what it is. A redemption fee, even though it's a no load mutual fund, a redemption fee, it means that if you sell it before a certain length of time, and so Raj, you have to ask them. It could be 3 months, 6 months, or a year. It could be 9 months. You have to hold it for that length of time, and then there'll be no redemption fee. That's what that means. So the redemption fee is because you're selling it sooner than they want you to sell it.
So if we keep it for that longer term, so there should not be redemption fee, right?
Correct. It goes away.
Okay. All right. That's the only question I have.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Suraj. Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Patrick, Mill Valley, how you doing?
Here's my question. What I want to know is, my wife and I are so busy with our kids and stuff, and I'm really responsible for the portfolio of my retirement, which I watch pretty closely, but a lot of times we just have a tough time taking care of the bills.
Right.
And I didn't know if there's how you might go about getting like someone to help you with that.
Paying the bills or managing help managing your portfolio?
The bills, because the portfolio I can stay on top of, but taking care of the bills, everything just goes crazy, and I'm trying to, you know, make sure I put enough into retirement, but then there's always these bills popping up with kids and, you know, just life.
That is a real pain in the butt. That is life, though, isn't it, Patrick?
Yeah.
If you're talking about actually physically paying the bills, these days, almost all the bill payers, all of them allow you to pay it online and be automatic about it. In other words, you never have to issue a check.
Oh, I see.
And almost all of them will let you set up a mortgage, electric bill, all those normal bills you get every month. Every
right.
one of them would much prefer you not send them a check. Much prefer you do it automatically through your checking account, just do a transfer and let them notify you've collected your money and here's what the bill was.
Okay.
And that would save you a lot of headache. All the young guys in my office, that's how they do it. They never issue checks. Now,
okay.
I must admit, my wife is a dinosaur. She pays the bills at the house.
Yeah, that's my wife, too.
Yeah, and she writes checks out, and I've tried to convince her to do otherwise. At the office, I have automatic pays a lot.
Okay.
Boy, does it save a lot of time and headache.
Yeah.
Does.
Okay, I'll look into that.
That will help you. That'll help you a lot.
Okay.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. This is Invest Talk. How do you get your teenagers' interested in investing? How do you get them interested in investing their money? Investing. Where do you begin? How about yourself? So let's talk about it. Any money topic is open for conversation. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Dividend investing still works in a rising rate environment. Now, there's been studies to show this. You know, we know that, you know, dividend stocks compete with bonds because that's just the nature of the business. You know, stocks always compete with bonds, always do. If they get more yield out of bonds because they're safer, they'll go there. So they want, you know, everybody wants a higher yield or a higher return from stocks, or else they'll move to bonds. And that's and what makes bonds more attractive is higher interest rates. And the Fed has been raising interest rates. So the thinking is that maybe more people move over to bonds from stocks. And maybe bonds will outperform stocks because of it. Now, the problem is the data, the history, the research doesn't really bear that out. Interest rates and stock dividends compete. And it seems that even when interest rates go up, stocks still outperform. High dividend paying stocks outperform. So when do they underperform? There has been a study to go back and look at the speed of the rate of increase by the Federal Reserve and what that does. And you can read the article for yourself. And it points out that if the speed of rate increases is very slow, stocks, dividend-paying stocks will outperform the bonds. When they don't, and that's, they said 7 out of 10 times. So 7 out of 10 times they do it. Through the three times it didn't, interest rates were rapidly increased by the Fed. Rapidly. Now, do you think the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates fast in 2016? Now, that does not say, remember, this is comparing stocks and bonds. So the stocks and bonds relative performance is what we're talking about. But that doesn't mean stocks have to go up. They can go down. The value of stocks can go down, but the bonds will go down faster. See, so it's not necessarily saying you'll get better returns automatically, positive returns, not necessarily. You got to read in between the lines to pick that up. They're not saying that. They're not saying that you're going to have positive returns. Goldman Sachs says that, single digits, in their private client report, for the $10 million clients or higher, 10 million or higher clients that they have, they say that they're going to have a positive return. But would you expect them to say to their clients, you might want to remove your money from our management because the market's going to go down? They're not going to say that. They're always going to say positive things, aren't they? So just be careful. This study we're talking about, though, just shows that don't think bonds will outperform dividend-paying stocks just because interest rates are going up and yields are going to be higher. It's not the case 7 out of 10 times. Our first priority is answering your questions. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. I'm calling in with a question on making short-term trades in traditional IRA account that I have, and wondered what the tax consequences would be in the traditional IRA. I guess the funds are tax deferred. So with day trades, I guess any profits would be taxed at a rate when I start making withdrawals. Is that correct? Wanted to see what your opinion is for using a traditional IRA to make short-term trades. I'll be listening for your answers. Thank you. I enjoy your show.
So the answer is will the short-term trades do anything in an IRA, do anything with taxes? And the answer is no. The IRA is only taxed, a traditional IRA is only taxed when you start taking the money out in retirement. Then that money you take out is added to your adjusted gross income for that year, and you pay income tax on it. If your adjusted gross income that year is very, very low, you'll pay very low income tax. Now, so if you buy and sell, and you do short-term trades inside an IRA all the time, all the money you make or lose makes no difference in taxes. Doesn't affect taxes at all. So if you were going to be a day trader and you anticipated making a lot of short-term trades, which means that, you know, you'll be taxed at a higher rate if they were in a regular account, if you do that in an IRA, then you'll have no tax consequences at all. So the answer is yes, you'll have no tax consequences in short-term trades in an IRA. You'll have no tax consequences on long-term trades in an IRA. You have no tax consequences at all in a traditional IRA. Okay? You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up on the next half hour, how do you get an estate plan together? What do you start? What do you do? What do you need to know? 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. You can call us right now.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our Invest Talk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free Invest Talk Insider program on investtalk.com. You know, you can get a link to our featured Talking Point article. It's there on investtalk.com. And we welcome your questions and ideas for money topics, too, that you want to hear more about. Our anytime, anywhere number is 888-99-CHART. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? We already talked about dividend investing, how it still works. How about the problem with our economy for the U.S. markets and our economy? Let's talk about that. This is an article that I picked up out of Forbes, which I thought was very interesting. And everybody's worried about China and how that affects. But the real worry is that globally, economies are slowing down. And specifically, industrial production in the United States. Industrial production. And that will drag us into possibly into a recession. That's really what everybody's worried about. We're slowing. The world economy is slowing, and they're going to drag us down. Our industrial production is slowing. It's getting worse. But is that really the case? So, the broad leading economic indicators globally are not showing evidence of a pending recession. Not yet. And U.S. production looks like the industrial activity here in the U.S. is probably better than most investors fear. Now, why is that? Why is it probably better? Well, because of the energy collapse. Exploration for energy collapsed. And, of course, that's part of industrial production. Now, all those wells and drilling and making wells, capping them and stop drilling, all that activity probably means that the energy investment and the price of oil should stabilize, because they are still, all that new wells, they've already been developed and they're producing. And that's one of the problems. We're producing more oil than we need. But the activity to get new wells, that collapse. So in 2016, we might see that stabilize. But more importantly, this affected all industrial production, all the industrial production numbers, and it's not going to do that going forward. Plus, world trade levels Well, in 2015, declined 4%. But if you look, go back a few years, you find that 2014, it was up 5%. And for the years 2011 to 2013, it was growing only at 2%. So we're just moving back to what it was. It grew really high in 2014, gave much of that back in 2015. And now for the last 6 months, we see it picking up again, but at a slower pace, maybe at a more sustainable place. And finally, the consumer, the U.S. consumer, they didn't provide very much support in 2015. Despite all the extra money not pumping in, the gasoline prices being so low, despite that, they didn't spend much of it. They saved it, and they didn't spend it. So that kind of affected 2015. So this report that I'm reading to you or discussing with you from Forbes kind of points to a more steady industrial production number. Maybe the consumer will spend a little bit more, and the world commerce trade should slowly pick up this year. That's what this report says. Now, does that translate into a stronger stock market? Isn't that really what I as investors are more interested in? That's what we are. Are we not interested in that? I think so. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, so I'd like you to join in. Any money question, our anytime line is 888-99-CHART.
Time now for this market update for Monday, February 1st. Another steep fall for oil prices, but the market resisted any big reaction. Monday brought about a 6% drop in prices of crude oil and natural gas. The Dow Jones Industrial Average edged down 17 points, or about 0.1%, to 16,449. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index lost less than a point to 1,939, and the NASDAQ Composite edged up 6 points, or about 0.1%. Bond prices fell. The yield for a 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.96%. This market update brought to you by KPP Financial. And when Steve meets with our listeners, he covers a lot of ground. One of the most important considerations is allocation. People are concerned about risk, and allocation connects directly with risk. If you're concerned about shielding your retirement funds from too much risk but maximizing growth, think about investing an hour with Steve in one of our California satellite offices or by Skype or telephone. To start the process, go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting. The next date's coming up at Dana Point in Southern Orange County, February 10th. Skype call set for February 17th. And Steve will be in our San Jose satellite office on February 24th. Now we continue with this Invest Talk replay. You can always get your question to Steve and Justin, 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, we're going to go to one of my favorite things, Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money choices we make that can have lasting impact. Do you need an estate plan? And where do you begin? Well, how do you get your estate plan together? Well, here's a couple of tips from Mark Powell. Mark is the founder of practicalplans.com, which provides high-quality estate plans for California families. He's a law firm. And it's usually very reasonable prices. First thing you do is you start with a thorough list of your assets and their current values. You have to start there. There are two kinds of estate plans, distribution plans and tax plans. Most people just need a distribution plan that focuses on how your assets are going to be given away upon your death, or how people should take care of you on your incapacitation. Your estate plan isn't just about your death. Because what if you get, and I've had this, my parents both, we needed to take care of them. We needed a durable power of attorney over their medical power of attorney. But also it's about your children too. If your kids are under 18, your plan should identify the person who should be taking care of them. At one point, me and my wife are going to be watching or taking care of about 25 kids if the parents passed away. Thank goodness they didn't happen. But you know, and when you talk about your children and you say, hey, I want my brother and his wife to get my kids if I pass away, that's not a smart thing to do. You pick one person. What happens if they get a divorce? If you say both people are going to take care of your kids. So that's a wiser thing to do. And one of the biggest decisions you'll have to make is whether or not you want your spouse to have unlimited control of your assets. When you die, do you want your spouse to have that kind of control? Find an attorney you can talk to about these things. And many questions or things you're going to talk to might be uncomfortable, but you need to discuss it if you have any size estate. So, again, these are tips from Mark Powell, who's the founder of PracticalPlans.com, which provides estate plans for California families. And that's InvestTalk Personal. If there's a topic you want to know more about, get in touch. We're right here now at 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
How about some inside information? We have a whole library of helpful webinars, a series of info sheets on subjects ranging from insurance to annuities. Become an InvestTalk insider. Join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Okay, let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Steve, I have a question about bonds. I have an Oppenheimer International A-Share Bond Fund, and I put my dividends back in each month. Am I paying that 4.75% each time I put my dividend back in?
Yes, you are. Most of them is the way that happens is yes, you are. Are you buying it direct from Oppenheimer or are you going through a broker?
When I set it up, it was through a broker.
Check it, but generally speaking, the answer would be yes. He gets a fee every time you buy it. The only reason why I know that is I have a brother-in-law. It wasn't through Oppenheimer, through somebody else, but a big firm like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the same thing. He was reinvesting the dividends. You know, it was a very small hit every time he reinvested those dividends. But I said, they should get rid of that completely. And all it took for him was a phone call.
A phone call to who?
To Oppenheimer, through the brokerage firm.
And then the brokerage firm does what?
Waives his fee on the dividend reinvestments. Remember, it's not a lot of money to him. He's not going to make you mad just because, you know, it's just an automatic thing.
I will check.
Yeah, so you got to check that out. I mean, that's something you don't want to just let it go.
Another question about bonds?
Sure.
I get really confused about bonds and how the NAV versus the yield.
It's confusing to a lot of people. Try to remember when you're buying a bond fund as opposed to buying a bond directly, operates a little bit differently. If you bought a bond directly, you could just hold on to that bond, let it mature, and you get your money back plus the interest. But during the time that you're waiting for it to mature, that bond can go up and down in value, right?
Yes.
Bonds go up in value generally when interest rates go down. Now, why is that so? Okay, real simple. If you bought a 10-year bond today paying 5%, tomorrow, if the interest rates go down to 4%, I'm, of course, obviously exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, the interest rates for that same bond is now 4%. Isn't your bond worth more at 5% than what you paid for it just the day before? Because now the new ones are 4%. So your bond's paying a whole 1% higher. So the value of your bond actually went up because now bonds are paying less yield. So it's an inverse relationship. When interest rates go down, bond values go up. So in a mutual fund, you first want to know what kind of bonds do they invest in. Do you happen to know, Mike?
Yes, I have a Morningstar software, so I have all 150 bonds that are in it.
Are they junk bonds? Are they government bonds?
All U.S. Treasury note, Japan government, Ireland Republic, Belgium,
okay.
On and on.
International. So they're going everywhere in the world.
Yes.
Then it makes your job a little harder because you have to know what the interest rates are going on in all those different countries. Mike, generally speaking, if the interest rate's going down, yeah, your bond value goes up.
Okay.
If interest rates are going up in general, your NAV, net asset value, will go down. Question.
Thank you, Steve. Bye.
Thank you. Good night. 888-99-CHART. 33% of the oil companies are going to in danger of going bankrupt. Did you know that? 33% of them. That's the stat. And over 30 small oil companies have already gone bankrupt, owing $13 billion junk bonds. So they're not paying those $13 billion to jump on, but you, somebody out there bought them. So who bought the junk bonds and who got hit $13 billion? So this is why I don't want to be in the small company era. It's just too dangerous. The oil prices are going to probably stay low. And the current downturn in oil is deeper and longer than the last five oil price crashes since 1970. You're just going to have to be very, very careful, and you're going to have to be very particular where you're going to put your money in that sector. Okay? More and more retirement decisions have something to do with real estate, which is why KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent. Justin is our licensed real estate agent on staff, and we partnered with an international real estate company that's very, very good. So, if you have real estate decisions to make, give us a call. 888-99-CHARGE, how to reach us. You want to maximize your sale of your property. You know, today you just don't go locally. You go international. You try to find, there's a lot of buyers from Asia looking for real estate. So you need to contact Justin directly by going to investtalk.com.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I have a question on leveraged ETFs. I've been trading these back and forth in these crazy markets and was wondering if I have any risk of these guys going out. I mean, you're talking about derivatives and stuff. Do I have any concern there? Thank you.
Yeah, when they're leveraged, you do, because, who are the leverage, how they achieve, how they achieve that leverage is they have to have contracts, swaps, and different kinds of contracts with different entities. And if the entity decides not to perform, then you have a problem. That's one of the issues with leverage. And another issue with leverage is they have a tracking error of the underlying index or underlying sub-index they've been following. They can't follow it that good. If it's two times or three times, they can't track it as well as you would hope. On the other hand, if you buy a non-leveraged ETF, they actually hold the underlying shares of the index or sub-index you're tracking, so there's no issues with not performing on a contract because there is none. So yeah, you do have that issue. How big that issue is, it will only come into play when there's a collapse, during a recession where, like our last financial collapse, the big financial recession we had, we had some large financial companies going out of business and couldn't perform under their contracts. You could have issues there. And of course, they try to prevent that, I would say the problem is small. The issue is a small concern, not a big concern. Now, what level of risk is appropriate for you? The answer is, it depends. But if you answer a series of simple questions you can do very fast, you can get a definitive answer. So why not take our risk analysis test? It's free. A couple minutes, that's all it takes. It's the beginning of a learning experience that will pay off in so many different ways. It really will help you. Take it now for free at investtalk.com. Just look for the free risk analysis tool.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey guys, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. Just had a quick money management question. I'm 27 years old. I live in Chicago. Recently received a promotion at work, so I have a little bit of extra money to play with. I was wondering what you think would be the best route to go with this. I'm currently contributing to my employer's 401k plan. Right now, I'm only doing the minimal 3%, plus they're matching that to a 6% total investment into the 401k, which it looks like has performed pretty well, in my opinion. I'm not an expert on this, but it looks like about 12% increase since I signed up for it. Do you think it would make more sense to just start contributing more to my company 401k with Fidelity, or start playing the stock market a little bit in individual stocks, which I'm trying to learn more about by listening to your podcast, which is awesome? Or do you think it would make more sense to just start putting more away toward my student loans so that I pay less interest over the long term in my student loan amount? But yeah, that's my question. Hopefully you guys get to it. And thanks a lot for the podcast. I'm a big listener, and I feel like I'm learning a lot, so thanks a lot.
Well, that's a very good question. I think I would start with the increase in my 401k. You're getting 6% total. I wonder if they will match more. Is that the maximum match is 3%? Or will it go up more? But I think you want to save, get up to 10% of your income. That's really what you want to save on average, if you can, year over year over year over year. So you're 6% now. I'd like to see you get that to 10. The student loan, if those, they're usually very, very low cost. And you didn't mention how much those loans are. What's the interest rate on there? If the interest rate is very, very low, I wouldn't be in a big rush to pay those off, even though I don't like that. But you're young. You really want to get the tax advantage of putting money aside in your 401k or IRA, you know, as opposed to paying off the student loan fast. Now, you do want to pay them off eventually. I mean, I don't like loans, you know, but over a lot of time. Learning to invest and buy individual stocks. Notice I put that down at the lowest end of this discussion, the third thing, because that's a hard thing to learn. It's hard to do, and it takes a lot of work, a lot of education, a lot of understanding how things work. You don't want to buy just one stock or two stock. You know, that's very dangerous. You want to manage the risks of a portfolio, and you have to have a good sized portfolio to do that. I like about $100,000. Then you can have, you know, 30 different stocks, at least 20. So, but buying one stock here and one stock there, while being kind of fun, it's high risk. And you can do it, but with just very little bit of your money. Because, you know, you'll learn over the years that that's very high risk. One of the worst things that could happen is you'd be right for the first time on the first one you pick, because then you think you're going to be right all the time. And that's not how it works. It just isn't. But, so I would increase my 401k first. That would be the first thing I'd do.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
China says, the senior Chinese economic official got kind of indignant at the allegation that the yuan, or whatever they want to call them, renminbi, call their money, would fall 10% this year. He thought it was, quote-unquote, ridiculous. It says that China will defend it. Now, this kind of reminds me of Japan in the 80s, 70s and 80s. They were going to defend their currency. They wanted to keep it, you know, Japan wanted to keep it weak enough compared to the dollar so they can export. And they have, if you remember right, Japan had a huge account balance, you know, so that they could do whatever. They could buy, sell their currency, they kind of control it. And China has the same situation. They can interfere with market forces and try to control it. The question I have is, how long can they keep that up? You can't keep it up forever. And how much are they going to defend it? And should they? See, China is just experimenting with these free market forces that they don't really care for too much. They like to be more predictable. Well, free market's free market. They want to be in the free market because that gives them the best economic growth. But at the same time, they don't want to give up control. Can't have both ways. I'm glad you spent this hour with me. I appreciate it. Our time is up. But if you have questions and you want to ask, you still can ask them on our 24-hour listener line. Just go to 888-99-CHART and leave the question there. We'll get to it on the next program. I'm Steve Peasley, a registered investment advisor. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, Thank you for listening, and let's get back together next time on Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.